9 o'clock on the East Coast, 6 o'clock Pacific. It's EJ Stewart filling in for Maggie and Perloff here on the Infinity Sports Network. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. It's funny, I sit around here and sometimes, I've not been here for almost 2 months, which is a wild time. For those who do not know, I tore my patellar tendon playing kickball, which is, I'll admit, when you say it out loud, as many times as I've had to over the last 2 months, not great. You don't get great reactions. I've said it again, and I just watched Ryan's face behind the glass, and he's like, ugh. He knows that I did this already, by the way. This is not news to him. But me still saying it still makes him make weird faces back.
Because when you think about it, it's nasty. It's very nasty.
It's a great way to describe it.
Because didn't your kneecap go out of place?
Oh, yeah. It was dislocated. I always leave that part out because, like, when I talk to the doctors or when I talk to anybody medical, like, they kind of like, yeah, your kneecap is dislocated, but, like, whatever. Like, it's almost like that's the expectation we rupture your patellar tendon. But, yeah, like, my kneecap was also dislocated. Sorry for those eating breakfast at home or feel grossed out by it. Ryan just had the shivers.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
Behind the glass. Like, so, yeah, it's a gruesome injury. It's not fun. If I had any advice for people, don't rupture your patellar tendon ever. Definitely don't do it playing kickball because when you tell the story, people are like, wow, that sounds ridiculous. I'm like, it was ridiculous. But either way, I'm so happy to be back in the studio. Coming back to some of this stuff I'm watching as I look around the studio, look around the office, almost feels like a time capsule. Like I'm looking to my right and I see the whiteboard that we have back here, which we use for various reasons. And there was, when I was injured, I had surgery and I was out for a little bit where I just wasn't doing anything on the show for a short amount of time. I didn't watch the show every day. I watched the whole show every day. I usually watch some of it, but I didn't get to watch the whole show every day. So there's some stuff I don't know that happened or I missed. And I'm looking at this whiteboard, and I know this didn't happen while I was here because I would have remembered this. I just see a whiteboard that says, Pete's mad.
Good times.
And it has a list of things that annoyed him.
That was one day.
And I'm looking at this list. Some things I remember, some things I don't. Like, why Peabody, the board operator here on the show, why was he mad at Gunnar Henderson?
Because he opted into the home run derby. Because he's on his fantasy team, and he was mad that he's going to ruin his swing and ruin his chances to win the fantasy championship.
That's selfish of Pete. The fans want to see Gunnar Henderson. This list includes Gunnar Henderson, suspended coach from Uruguay. That part I think I did remember. I think he was upset.
He said cheat better.
Yeah, the way he cheated wasn't good. Which I was like, okay. Zach Wilson engagement. No idea why that would anger Pete. I don't even like Zach Wilson, but I'm happy for him. But like Tyrod Taylor as a landlord, I know he had the issue with his ex and wanting to move out his ex. I don't know. Why would that make him mad? I don't understand. The Mariners feel like that's the one that I saw it. I was like, well, maybe this was recent because the Mariners have now sucked.
Wait, what does it say about the Mariners?
It doesn't say anything. It just says Mariners. I'm just like, okay.
That might be new. I don't remember.
Are they adding to the list? I don't know. But like the Mariners are there. I see. I don't know if I should read this one, but I'm going to read it anyway.
Haley Walsh?
No, I just see Samter.
Oh, Samter, that was a Zach one.
Oh, Zach added to the list. Okay, because I'm like,
Did we lose the merchandise from
I don't know.
Tua girl?
Oh, is that?
The Tua girl?
Yeah, Hot Tua.
It's still there?
No. No, Hot Tua girl. They erased that, I guess.
Selling merch.
Okay. That was erased on the list, or maybe he got over that. And then there's Jets logo?
Yeah, I think it was the oval.
Yeah, the oval. That logo was not great. But he's mad about it?
There's something dumb.
My gosh. Pete's anger on the show has gotten to a point where we now have to list the things he's mad about. I assume these are faux pas that I can't talk to him about. Like, I have to avoid these things, I assume, like the plague. It's kind of hard because we're both Jet fans, so we talk about the Jets all the time, and there's like three Jet things on this list. But then there's like things that you could just randomly like step on a grain. Like I could just say, hey, you saw that Gunnar Henderson play last night, and he may just like curse me out because apparently Pete's mad about him. Or I could just be like, how about the Mariners? And that could start a fight apparently because there's a list here about things that make Pete mad. And they're, besides a Jets connection, they seem extremely random. Also, the Jets connection has nothing to do with football. They're all things. It's a logo. It's Tyrod Taylor as a landlord, and it's an ex-quarterback's engagement. That guy is, he's an original. He's a one-on-one. Shout out to the great Pete the Body Bilotti. I hate week zero, but I love talking college football, which is why I'm so excited to do this. We have EJ's five bold predictions for the college football season. I thought so long and hard about these yesterday because I was like, I want to give the people something that they could really sink their teeth into. I don't want to come here and be like, well, Georgia's going to be really good. And, hey, that Quinn Ewers kid, he could really throw the football. I don't want to give you that. I'm not doing that. I love college football too much. I've spent way too much time invested in college football for the last month because of the release of EA College Football 2025. So it's like, if I don't know anything about, if I can't give you five real solid bowl predictions, I've wasted my time for the last 2 months. Because outside of preparing for this show from home and PT, all I've done is play EA College Football. And recently, Love is Blind UK. Those are the only things I've done for the last month, 2 months, because I can't go nowhere. So I want to make sure I give you guys something here. So let's go through this. So let's start with number one. No team finishes the season undefeated. No one finishes undefeated. And that may sound like, oh, what's the big deal with that? Well, look, I mean, we've had now several years in a row where somebody goes undefeated and everyone's in love with Ohio State. Everyone's in love with Georgia. They are absolutely loaded. But both teams, tough conferences that just got tougher. Ohio State, are they really going to survive road trips to Oregon and Penn State in one season? Potentially then also a Big Ten championship game. How about Georgia? Georgia has five top 15 matchups in this season. That includes road trips to Alabama, road trip to Texas, road trip to Ole Miss, who I'll talk about in a second. And then an SEC championship game, which will presumably be against a top 15 team. And I say undefeated. I'm not even including playoffs. I'm saying during the regular season, no undefeated team. You look at the ACC. There are three intriguing teams: Florida State, Clemson, Miami. I mean, Clemson's got Georgia week one, so that seems unlikely that they go undefeated. Florida State and Miami, are they really not going to slip on a banana peel at some point during the season? That seems unlikely as well. Big 12, talented teams, but too deep. Too many teams that are close to each other. Talent disparity is not that big. So I'm not looking at a Big 12 and undefeated champion. So I think we have no undefeated teams going into college football play, which I think will be awesome. I think it will make the seeding and the ranking extremely controversial. People have been concerned about whether or not there's going to be controversy regarding the college football playoff now that there's so many teams. I think the fact that you'll have so much parity and so much losses, I think that Georgia and Ohio State both lose at least one game, I think that'll create for some good conversation. Number two. Colorado fails to make bowl eligibility. Look, the Buffs have two big-name stars on the field in Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. They have a football icon on the sidelines in Deion Sanders. I just feel like Colorado hasn't really learned from the mistakes from last season's tailspin. Because you got Coach Prime, who seems almost more invested in facing head-on these petty squabbles with the media or internet trolls, instead of trying to limit distractions, which is usually the good job of a head coach. You also have a team that now is ushering in the season 43 transfers. And I know this was a bad team last year. So I'm not saying they didn't need the portal. They absolutely did. But what we saw last season was people questioning whether or not a team could really just overhaul a roster in 1 year and become a winner because of so much of the turnover. And instead of trying to keep any continuity, Deion just, he basically did part two of going there and getting that portal. This was the sequel to that. He told the team that he got into the portal last year, that he got from the portal, to go back in. Of all these guys that he brought like 50 guys in last year. Now he's bringing another new 43 this year. I don't know how you build continuity, how you build a real team, how you build a program, if you got new guys every single year. So I think the number of portal transfers, I think, is a little high. There's also massive changes on the coaching staff. New offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, who's full-time now taking responsibility. He was kind of a weird analyst, then play caller. It was all weird. New defensive coordinator, new O-line coach. We're talking about three or four or five, like, big-time assistants that changed. So the staff now looks completely different. Warren Sapp is around there. Shout out to Warren Sapp, great Miami Hurricane. but he's never coached before. He's talking about how they're going to be a great run defense because he's there. I mean, I don't know how you build continuity with all these changes. And then you got the aforementioned Big 12. There are no weeks off. Now, like, they were in the Pac-12 last year, and, like, you play against Oregon or Washington, like, that's an L because they're just so much better than Colorado. They're probably more competitive games, but I just feel like every week you don't have the layups. You don't have an Oregon State or who's matching pretty good. You don't have a Washington State. Like, you don't have some of these teams that Colorado had a better chance against. Like, every game's going to be tough. So I just think it's going to be a tough year for Colorado. I have them at 5 wins, which means they would not make bowl eligibility. Let's go to number 3.
Number 3.
This is the spiciest one, I think. It's the one that I think people will be like, okay, this is where you're going too far. I have Jackson Dart winning the Heisman. Now, betting on anyone associated with Lane Kiffin to win anything significant, usually a fool's errand. It wouldn't be the first time I've been called a fool. So, I'm going to take that plunge. Look, if this isn't the year for Ole Miss to really make something happen and make history, it's never going to happen. Dart is experienced. He's fearless. He's battle-tested, and battle-tested in a way where essentially it was him getting his brains beaten in by Alabama and Georgia for 2 or 3 years and some lopsided losses. But I feel like those experiences have actually helped Jackson Dart, and I feel like everything's in line for Dart and the Rebels to get their lick back this year. He has a solid stable of backs, but none are big enough names to really steal the spotlight from him as a star. Their receiving core is awesome. And especially now, they got this kid, Deion Smith, who was the number one JUCO player, who everybody wanted, former LSU guy. This kid was at LSU, and the Tigers people were so excited. They thought that he would be better than Malik Nabers, who's currently right now just lighting it up in training camp for the New York Giants. So an already loaded receiving core just got better as Deion Smith became eligible. I think Ole Miss is in good shape. And I think Jackson Dart can put up some good numbers. The schedule, it's an SEC schedule, but it's not that tough. Or at least it's not impossible. Yes, you got Georgia, but it's at home late in the season. So I think maybe Georgia has injuries. Maybe they're a little fatigued. That's a better thing for them. They only have one ranked road game. That's number 13, LSU. I think they're in good shape. And I think Jackson Dart, I think, becomes one of the big stories of the college football season. So after 89 years, I think Ole Miss gets their first Heisman. Let's go to number 4.
Number 4.
I take that back. I think this is going to be the one that I think most people are going to be like, this was, you're going to get mad at. Just because of the volume of their fans. They can sometimes be annoying. They definitely like to get after you. But as I said, I duck no smoke. So call in 855-212-4227 if you want the verbal fade. Notre Dame misses the playoffs. Everyone is penciling the Irish to make it into this newly expanded college football playoff. In many ways, it feels built for them. Not in the sense that they can get a top 4 seed. That is kind of a screwed up thing. And I think they got to fix that somehow. But the fact that it's 12 teams, Notre Dame scheduling, they can kind of cook their way into the thing every year because they can just not play against the best teams and put up a good record. Look, they have a big name QB transfer. They have an awesome defense. But I think Riley Leonard, is he a great talent or a great player? Similar to the question I had about Anthony Richardson, I have the same question about Riley Leonard. Great talent, a great player. Talent, kid can run. He has a great arm. He's athletic. He's strong. But his accuracy was bad last year when he played. Now, I know he's battling injuries, and he had ankle surgery, second one he's had on the same ankle. Maybe that will help him. I don't know. But he's not, to me, and I will again watch him in the ACC at Duke, never really overly impressed me as a thrower. He's very strong, and he's got a good arm, and he can run like hell. But I'm not convinced he's a great thrower. This is a team that lost 2 NFL tackles in Joe Alt and Blake Fisher. I'm not quite sure the Irish are going to be as good on offense as people think. I think their defense will be great. Freeman's a great defensive coach. But in his first 2 years at Notre Dame, they always lose these early season games against teams they shouldn't. And I think it's going to probably happen again. We look at the schedule and say Irish easily make the playoffs. I think Riley Leonard, maybe health, maybe a little sense that maybe he's a little overrated. I think he's one of the main reasons why they don't meet expectations. They actually miss the college football playoff. All right, let's hit the last one, number 5.
Number 5.
Oregon wins his first national championship. I'm a big believer in Dan Lanning. I just, sometimes you see a coach and you're like, that guy has it. Sometimes you can't like put your finger on it. And like, we know Dan Lanning's a great defensive coach, X and O's wise. He's been, you know, basically tutored by, you know, Kirby Smart. That's his mentor. Kirby Smart's giving him all the cosigns in the world. But what Dan Lanning's done in two seasons at Oregon, I'm extremely impressed by. Because I saw what his predecessor did after leaving Oregon in Mario Cristobal, and how Miami still trying to figure their way out. They may have a good year this year, but he's come to Oregon. He's taken to the next level. Like, they weren't competing national championships on the Mario Cristobal. They were a good team in the Mario Cristobal. He went to Oregon in 2 years, turned them into a legit national championship contender. And this team and this roster can be special. I mean, you got Dillon Gabriel, quarterback. Evan Stewart, elite wide receiver coming over from Texas A&M. Tez Johnson coming back at Oregon. You're talking about that trio in terms of offensive firepower. They're going to put up a ton of points. Lanning is, as I said, one of the best defensive coaches in college football. I think in year three with more of his players, you see that defense continue to improve. And they also got a big transfer at cornerback in Jabbar Muhammad from Washington, who left after all the fallout between with Kalen DeBoer leaving. I think Oregon does it. I think Dan Lanning is going to become one of the real, you know, kind of superstars and faces of college football. It feels like we're missing that. Like, with Saban gone, Meyer gone, a lot of that old guard is gone. And I look at college football right now, I say, who's the real face of college football? I know Kirby Smart won a lot of titles, and he could very well win this year. But he's just not that interesting. He's not going to give you a great quote. He seems all about business. I don't know if, like, that guy can become the face of college football unless he just wins every single year, which maybe he will. But I don't know. I think this Georgia thing has to come down at some point. I feel like Lanning has a personality. I think he's got the team. I think he's got the uniform, the look. I think Oregon is on one right now. I think they're one of the hottest programs in college football. The NIL money just flowing in thanks to Phil Knight. I think it all culminates this year in Oregon winning its first national championship. So those are my five bold predictions for the college football season. I'll read them off real quickly. Number one, no team finishes undefeated. Number two, Colorado fails to make a bowl. Number three, Jackson Dart wins the Heisman. Number four, Notre Dame misses the playoff. Number five, Oregon wins its first national championship. Ryan, I do not know if you're big into college football, but if you are, do you feel like any of these predictions are out there?
I agree with you on Dion.
Okay.
Oregon is a little far out there for me.
Really?
I just think the chemistry has to take time.
And in some ways, like what I said about Dion is why you could say Oregon won't work out.
Yes.
I just think because they have a lot of transfers. Now, it's not 43, but they have big transfers in big spots.
Well, talent will shine through. It's just...
Here's what I like about Oregon, though. I think, A, they have better transfers. Like, Dillon Gabriel, maybe one of the top three or four quarterbacks in college football. Evan Stewart, maybe one of the top four or five receivers in college football. Like, they got superstars coming to their team. So I think that's the one thing. I think their transfers are better. And two, I feel like they play in an extremely player-friendly offense. Like, I think if you're going to go to a team where you're going to, you know, transfer and everything changes, you got to learn new terminology, get chemistry. It feels like the Oregon offense, it's explosive, but I don't think it's that complicated. I think it's pretty simple. It's a lot of short stuff, a lot of quick reads, and it's a lot of letting the athletes kind of just be themselves and make plays with the ball once they get the ball in their hands. It's not about complex routes and complex schemes. That's not how you run this system. And I think that's a benefit for these guys. Because Dillon Gabriel, when he was running a similar system at UCF, was borderline national championship kind of quarterback. So I think that system is going to help him. The Big Ten is the wild card in this for me when I was thinking about a national championship pick. Because how do you... What is the, like? Is there any kind of blowback from saying, all right, now all your road games are traveling 3 or 4 hours on a plane every time, every week? You know, I actually got to look at the schedule. I'm not sure how many back-to-back weeks they have where they're going on the road, but certainly they're going to have a decent amount of road games. They certainly have a big one. Well, actually, they have Ohio State at home this year, but they're going to have some weird stuff with that maybe. I just look at their offense, and I look at an improving defense, and I say, I just don't know how many teams have the trio of offensive firepower of those guys. And they got great running backs, too. They're just complete. And I think the defense was probably the one question mark. But we've seen it get better every year. And I think Jabbar Muhammad was a huge transfer. We keep talking about Dillon Gabriel and talking about Evan Stewart. I think Jabbar may be not the most important, but I think he's, like, the X factor. I think if you add a corner like that who can really shut down a half of the field potentially, now that makes everyone's job better, because they're a defense that's stout, but they don't really get a lot of pressure. They don't get a lot of sacks from their front four. So you're going to have to cover. You're going to be able to cover now when you got a guy who could be an NFL player playing on one side of the field. So Oregon was the one, but you're okay with Dart and you're okay with Notre Dame. I'm surprised because that was
those Notre Dame. I can see happening. Dart, I can see happening. I just don't see Oregon winning.
Wow, interesting. I want to know what you guys think. Those are my five bowl predictions. Give us a call 855-212-4227. Who do you have for the national championship? Who do you have for the Heisman? Am I wrong about Notre Dame? I love college football, man, and it is. I think it is a shame that like. I love talking about this stuff. I love doing this. It's a shame that we have to do it, I think, a week earlier than we should because of week zero. Like, we were getting ready for the show on Thursday, and, like, I think it was Maggie or Perloff, obviously. It's only one of three options in these, you know, pre-production calls. And they're like, we should probably do our Heisman and National Championship picks, right? I was like, oh, yeah, I guess so, because there's games that matter. Even though they're games that probably will be unwatchable, they probably won't be all that fun. I mean, I don't know. I think that week zero is just not a it's a thing because they've made it a thing, but it's just I would be so happy if they got rid of it. But it doesn't mean that we can't still get excited for college football because I think this will be a historic season. And I have a lot of history. I have a first Heisman for Ole Miss, our first national championship for Oregon. I think you're going to see a lot of really awesome stuff. I think the college football playoffs is going to be amazing. I think adding the element of March Madness to college football is going to be great. You're going to have a group of five team in there. Who knows if they're able to make some noise. There's going to be somebody that's going to get upset. I know I keep seeing all these predictions and I see all these previews, and a lot of it has been a little chalk in terms of like picking the same Final Four, because it does feel in some ways like it's Ohio State and Georgia. In some ways, it feels like Ohio State and Georgia and the rest, but in a more macro way, it seems like it's Ohio State, Georgia, Oregon, and Texas and the rest. I don't think it will play out that way when we get to the playoffs. Because I think the length of the season will include more injuries, will include more variables that we're not going to expect by the time we get to game 14 and 15 of the college football season for some of these teams. Just like we see a team like the Philadelphia Eagles last year in the NFL start 10-0. And like if that was a college football season, they'd be packing it up and getting ready for the national championship game or a one-game college football playoff in a national championship. But we see the war of attrition that happens with a football season can lead to them teams kind of falling apart at the end. And I think there's a chance you actually may see that happen in college football in playoff games or in conference championship games, which I think will be really exciting. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. Coming up, there is some teasing that's happening about a super team-up. But would it work? I want to explore that in a little bit. It's EJ Stewart filling in for Maggie and Perloff. We'll be right back. I've spared you guys the pain of my singing, but shout out to Ryan Botcher, who's been great with the music. Anytime I host a show, it should be maybe the least important thing to people, but it's the most important thing to me because I think it sets the vibe of the show. It puts me in a certain position. Is the music that gets played, making sure that it jives with the energy I'm bringing. Usually when that happens, I usually end up going into song that usually probably annoys the listener and annoys the person behind the glass. But I got a lot of things going on. I got a ruptured patellar tendon that's healing. I'm have my legs up on like this cardboard box to rest my leg on. I got some plastic here that's keeping my leg in place. There's a lot going on. I'm not going to add to that by then trying to sing while doing live radio. So just be lucky, I guess, that I'm in this situation. It's EJ Stewart, executive producer of Maggie and Perloff, filling in for Maggie and Perloff here. We have about a half hour left on the show. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. I floated this out there for the break because I've been seeing stuff. And this is one of those things where, as a sports fan, you say, be careful what you wish for because it might happen. And I think I did it to myself. Because I've said it a bunch on the show, and you guys may or may not know, but I'm a huge Steph Curry fan. He's one of my all-time favorite athletes. It's funny, like, you know, I love basketball. It's my all-time favorite sport. I played basketball growing up. And, like, you know, my dad, his all-time favorite athlete is Magic Johnson. This is his sports idol. And, like, the relationship he has to Magic and what, it, like, Magic means to him is just different than any other sports figure that's played in sports. And I always thought, man, I don't think I ever had that relationship with an athlete in terms of just what they mean to me and like what they mean as just like what they stand for, their great play, and just like how you relate to them. And then Steph Curry came around, and Steph Curry is that guy to me. What Magic is to my dad and a lot of fans of his age is who Steph Curry is to me. And I'm not a Golden State Warrior fan, so I'm not like, you know, married to the idea that Steph Curry has to end his career with the Warriors. It would be cool. It would be really cool, but I watched Steph Curry do what he did in the Olympics, and I think he's wasting his time in Golden State. They can't find a way to add more stars to that team. They're clearly one of the 7th or 8th best teams in the West. Like, it would be best if Steph Curry requested a trade and got himself out of there and got himself to a winner. But then I look on social media, and I see Stephen Curry change his profile picture from, I don't even know what it was before, but I think it was a picture of him with the Warriors. If it wasn't, it may have just been a generic picture. But anyway, he changed his picture to a picture of him and LeBron James. And then he said, okay, it's a picture. They won a championship, gold medal, and it was very important, A, for them to team up for the Olympic team. Steph Curry never played, and then they won a gold medal. So, like, maybe he's just celebrating that. It's okay. I'll move on from that. Then he changes his Instagram bio from Golden State Warriors guard to Olympic gold medalist. Takes out all Warriors reference. Like, he has all these other things, too. He has, like, father of three daughters and a son. He has all this other crap He has all this other stuff he cares about in his bio. One of them was guard for the Warriors. Removes that completely. Adds Olympic gold medalist. He could have removed some of the other stuff. There's some business stuff in there. There's stuff he could have removed. But he made sure to remove the Warrior part to this and added Olympic gold medalist. And, you know, it's been floated around that, you know, a lot of Laker fans, a lot of Laker players even, some of the stuff we've seen on social media with, you know, Jared Vanderbilt and the stuff he's commenting on, like, comments on social media, like, perhaps a LeBron-Steph tandem in the Lakers is what we need. Because we got the report earlier this week that Rich Paul had nixed any possible trade of LeBron going to the Warriors during the midseason trade deadline, which apparently there were some conversations about because Rich Paul wanted to protect LeBron's legacy. Because he thought that it would be a bad look for LeBron to go to a fourth team and try to win a championship with some other guy on a team that's not his. We can get into the politics of that. I don't know if it would have been that big a deal. But now, as a Steph Curry fan who has been hell-bent on talking about how great Steph Curry is, again, he's my basketball idol as a player. Now you're talking about him teaming up with the enemy in L.A. It'd be good for his career. I think Steph and LeBron with the Lakers can work. I don't know championship work, but like to me, like we say, will they win a championship? It's like, I don't know. Like it's championships are luck. Like it's a lot that goes into it. My thing is you got to get yourself in the conversation. You got to get yourself in the picture to have a shot. Right now, the Warriors don't got a shot. The Lakers don't have a shot. But if Steph Curry could find his way to get to L.A., and if he maneuvers himself and starts throwing his weight around and say, hey, I think it's time to part ways and I want to go to the Lakers, it'd be a tough pill to swallow for Joe Lacob. I don't know if Joe Lacob has the standing to say, I'm not going to send him to the Lakers. I don't think he could do that to Steph Curry. I've seen other people do that. We saw the Pacers do that with Paul George. We've seen the Nets do that with Kyrie Irving where they're saying, I'm not sending you to the Lakers. And they could do that because those players weren't as beloved by their fans. They're not icons by their fans. So, like, there is no other side of your disrespecting your own legend. With Steph Curry, that would 100% be a conversation. So I sit here and say, man, as a Steph Curry fan who's had to watch him have these wars with LeBron and you argue with LeBron fans left and right about who's the best player in the NBA at any given time, who deserved this MVP, who deserved that MVP. I kept saying for months that Steph Curry needed to get out of Golden State, that he needed to demand a trade. He needed to find a contender. Never really thought it'd be the Lakers. And nobody wants to see the Lakers get Steph Curry like that. And I know he's older. I know we say he's not the exact same player, but I don't know. I saw him in the Olympics playing those last two games. I saw how the Olympics rejuvenated him and LeBron. When I watched those games, it told me if those guys get to contenders or get to play together somewhere, they can compete one more time for a title. I do not want to see with the Lakers. I think a lot of NBA fans will be very upset if it's the Lakers that Steph Curry goes to. So this was a thing of be careful what you wish for. I'm seeing some tea leaves about Curry, LeBron in LA, and I'm like, I should have just kept my mouth shut. You cannot speak things into existence that you don't want. I didn't want to see Steph Curry leave the Warriors. I do not want to see him on the Lakers selfishly. And I know a lot of Warrior fans and a lot of Steph Curry fans agree with me. 855-212-4227. Let's get to some updates. Let's talk to Peter Schwartz. What's happening?
All right, Jay, we'll start with baseball and our first stop, San Diego.
Gillespie rocks and fires. And a bouncing ball to the right side. Bogarts can't get to it. That's through as well. Lindor scores to make it 6-1. RBI single for Alonso. Bogarts went to his left and could never get there. And Alonso adds another run.
Key thread on Mets radio during a 5-run ninth inning that put the game away, and the Mets beat the Padres 8-3. The Braves beat the Phillies 3-2. So the Braves lead the Mets by a game and a half for the third National League wildcard spot. That's going to be a race that I think is going to go right down to the wire.
I think it will. The Mets are on a good start here. I think the Braves stabilizing as well. This is great for baseball. Like, the fact that it's these two teams probably for those last two spots, those fan bases will be engaged. Certainly the Mets fans will be engaged because they can't stand the Braves. There will be some big-time games in September, so that will be fun.
And now to Baltimore. Astros and Orioles opening up a series at Camden Yards.
2-2. And that is lined in the center field. A base hit for Shea Whitcomb. That'll score two as Gamels and Myers come home. A two-run single for Shea Whitcomb. And the Astros' lead is now 6-0. Whitcomb with his first big league RBIs.
Robert Ford on Astros radio. Astros beat the Orioles 6-0, and they open up a 5.5 game lead over the Mariners in the AL West. And with that Orioles loss, the Yankees now a game and a half up on Baltimore in the AL East. The Yankees beat the Guardians 6-0. Aaron Judge with his 48th home run of the season. Now to Washington.
And the pitch, swing, and a long drive to left center field. This one way back. It's got a chance. Going, going, gone. Goodbye. Into the brewhouse. Red seats up into the right of the Rockies bullpen in left center field. Bang. Zoom goes Juan Yepes with his fourth home run of the big leagues this year.
That was Charlie Slows on Nationals radio. Nationals beat the Rockies 8-3. Elsewhere in baseball yesterday, you had the A's over the Rays 3-1. The Pirates beat the Reds 7-0. Paul Skeens now 8-2, 6 innings, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts. The Blue Jays beat the Angels 5-3. The Cubs beat the Tigers 10-2. Miguel Amaya with a grand slam. Cardinals over the Brewers 3-0. That's the 7th shutout win for the Cardinals this season. The Mariners fired manager Scott Servais and named Dan Wilson as their new manager. Amazing the turnaround in the wrong direction for the Mariners from where they were 10 games up in the AL West on June 18th, 20-23 since then, and now they make a managerial change.
Sage the whole organization. Sage the facilities. Sage the stadium. Sage the spring training
facilities.
You're
all in on this,
This is a long time for absolute futility. And I don't know why we don't talk about the Mariners. Well, I guess... And it's funny because...
Curse was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, I said they were cursed, and I think they are. Because, no World Series, okay, some teams don't win championships. But then, no one playoff appearance in 20-something years. The one playoff appearance you didn't get past first round. They're not a nothing franchise because those fans really love the Mariners and they care. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like if you could just have not paid attention to Mariners baseball for 30 years. And, you miss King Felix. Maybe you miss a Julio Rodriguez home run derby. Otherwise, you don't miss anything.
Yeah.
There's nothing about that. Anything that's happened with Seattle that is noteworthy in the history of baseball for the last 30 years. That's incredible to me.
And the year that they won 116 games, they lost to the Yankees in the playoffs.
Couldn't even get to the World Series.
They didn't even get to the World Series
that doesn't
year.
Tell you cursed. I don't know what does.
Preseason football yesterday, the Bears beat the Chiefs 34-21. The Colts over the Bengals 27-14. EJ talked about this earlier today. The Commanders trading wide receiver Jahan Dotson and a 2025 fifth-round pick to the Eagles for a third-round pick and 2 7th-round selections. Now, as we all know, we're in a different world and a different landscape when it comes to college sports with the transfer portal.
Correct.
So you sign somewhere... In the past, you're locked in there. If you wanted to leave, you had to sit out a year. Unless the coach left, then maybe you had a hardship thing. So now players are moving all over the place, no question about it. This comes to us from On Three Sports, an interview that took place with Miami, Ohio head coach Chuck Martin, and the reporter asked him about losing former kicker Graham Nicholson, who transferred to Alabama.
All right, special teams, lost your kicker. Carter McLaughlin.
We didn't lose him. He's at Alabama. We know
yeah,
exactly,
I understand
we know
that.
Exactly where he's at. You media people, it's all pretend. Like, no, Alabama stole our kicker.
They illegally
recruited our kicker and stole him from us. And, like, that's a fact. But that's – but we act like it's not – we live in this la-la world. Like, hey, let's not talk – I don't know why. Everybody knows what's going on. So, yeah, Alabama stole our kicker. A couple other schools tried to steal him.
So they stole their kicker.
Take a breath.
Okay, number one. Why is he getting on the media guy about not telling the truth about what? Like, I'll be honest, like, he could have been the best research reporter of all time, who had great sources, who's been following Miami, Ohio football like it's the White House. Nobody knew anything about the kicker being quote unquote stolen. From Miami, Ohio to Alabama. But yes, may have known that the guy left. Maybe you even know he went to Alabama. How would he know he got stolen? How would he know that?
Right.
The
basic premise of the question was that you lost your kicker. Okay, whether he was stolen or not, they lost their kicker. So now they have to find a kicker somewhere else.
And that's fine. But, like, it's not a lie. You did lose your kicker. Now you say, okay, it was stolen. All right. Well, I don't know what you want the reporter to do there. That's not his fault that you feel this way. Or it's not his fault that he's saying, like, he's acting like the reporter is, like, leaving out some important information that he knows, when that reporter clearly had no idea that anyone at Miami, Ohio thinks their kicker was stolen. Also, I will say this. To get this upset about your kicker being stolen says a lot about your program. I'm sorry, coach. Like, if you told me Alabama stole our wide receiver, I'd say, you know what? Yeah, I'd be upset about that too. But the fact that you're going crazy over the fact that your kicker was stolen tells me there ain't a lot out there in terms of talent that also you have to worry about at Miami, Ohio.
Also making an accusation that Alabama did something illegal. So now is this going to lead to the NCAA looking at this? Like, what was the illegal activity that caused them to feel
that
they
too. My thing is, like, if you're going to throw allegations out there, like, say what they did. Because the Kalen DeBoer has asked about it yesterday. I saw it, and he was like, kid entered the portal. We reached out to him. He signed. I have nothing more to say about it. I don't know what else to say. Like, you have to say, what did he do? Do you have text messages? Do you have phone calls? Like, I hate when people are like, oh, this thing happened. And then, like, they don't even elaborate on what happened. I don't know. You're doing this over a kicker. We talked about Aiden Childs saying take the over when it comes to this game, their first game of the season with Michigan State. I'm taking the under with everything Miami, Ohio, if he's this upset about losing a kicker.
Not like a five-star, like you said, not like a five-star wide receiver or quarterback or defensive lineman or something like that.
Right, and honestly, good for the kicker. Like, Miami, Ohio, like, it's a fine school. He's going to play at the University of Alabama. It's a dream for people, or Alabama University, whichever it is. It's a dream for people. Like, that's a great accomplishment. Like, there's life beyond Miami, Ohio football. You should maybe be happy for the kid. This was so corny.
And by the way, just with all this recruiting talk, I mean, my family and I are learning a whole lot about the recruiting. In the last few weeks, we've learned a whole lot of stuff about college recruiting. So I'll just leave it at that.
There you go. Thanks so much, Pete.
You got it.
Great to see you this week.
Have a great weekend. It is fantastic to see you. Be well. Get healthier. And we look forward to seeing you around here more often.
Thank you, man. Really appreciate that. Coming up, where the hell has this guy been? Where has he been? Apparently, he's showing up this weekend. I want to talk about him. We'll be right back. Hey, Mr. Rager, I told you, don't get me started. Let me stop before I anger people and they start turning off their radios, turning off their laptops, smartphones, whatever they are, if I sing too much. I love that song, though. Kid Cudi, man. What a legend. 855-212-4227 is the number to call. Had a fun show today, as I said before. I'm always ducking no smoke, so... You want to reach out to me, you can reach out to me via the telephone or Twitter, EJ_Stewart. At Pop Sauce tweets, Niners need to blank or get off the pot with Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams. Let's go. And I talked about earlier the fact that the Niners have not signed Ayuk or Trent Williams. And now we get the new reporter from Michael Silver that apparently the Commanders may now be in play for Brandon Ayuk. told you before, I don't know if this is necessarily a Niners thing. I'm not sure if this is something they can control. I think this is just a cycle of what happens with a team that has been around the rim, to use Jerry Jones's term, around the rim for so long and not winning. Now you're seeing the downsides of that. Like, usually this happens when you win championships, but they've been close and not winning. And now guys are getting older, saying, I don't want anything to do with training camp. If you're Trent Williams, probably. Guys are asking for handouts because now they've outperformed their contracts, like a Brandon Ayuk. Some guys just ask for money, I think, literally just to pay for weddings if you're Christian McCaffrey. I'm standing on business on that. I really think that's why he got that pay raise. Like, I think that this is a situation where you can't control this. This is why I don't feel good about the Niners repeating getting back to the Super Bowl. Because I just think that they were a team that at the time, they were so bought in. Everybody was all engaged. They bought in the Shanahan system. I think they bought in Kyle Shanahan himself. And that made things easier for them. I think now you got guys looking for money, guys looking for ways out of training camp. I just think that kumbaya Niners spirit we've seen for the last 3 years is gone. Could we forget the Niners? They're this very talented team now, but there was a time when they were kind of like the little engine that could. Like, when they were beating the Rams on the road in the playoffs, or playing against the Rams on the road in the playoffs, they lost, of course, in the NFC Championship game, or when they upset the Cowboys on the road in the playoffs. Like, there was a time, or upset the Packers. The Niners were not this, like, juggernaut team. Their roots are actually more of a, you know, underdog team. They become the juggernaut because of the talent they've amassed and the talent that they've developed. But I think what comes with that maybe comes a little relaxation, comes a little contentment. And I'm looking at the Lions, the Packers, the Eagles, the Cowboys. I'm looking at teams that are hungry, that haven't gotten to that position, or if the Eagles, you only got there once and lost. And the Cowboys have a bunch of issues with holdouts. That's another story. But the other teams, I don't see holdouts. I don't see guys missing camp. I don't see that stuff. So I think the fact that the Niners have to hold those teams off again another year, I don't think they do it. Where the hell has Bryce Young been? Where has he been? He's apparently going to play in the preseason this weekend. Thank you for gracing us with your presence. This was Dave Canales talking about what's going to happen with the starters. Ryan, do you have a cut of 5 here with Dave Canales talking about giving the starters reps this weekend?
My hope is to get the starters out there early in the game, get them some exposure. And the importance of it to me is how valuable the night before prep is. Waking up in the morning, we have a 1 o'clock kick. We got a lot of those this year. So just the body readiness, you know, the plan behind, you know, this camp was to practice early so that we can have that readiness going into this season where most of our kicks are 1 o'clock.
It might have been good to do this not the last week of preseason. I mean, last time I checked, wasn't Bryce Young throwing picks left and right last year? Last time I checked, didn't he struggle mightily? Last time I checked, isn't he a second-year player? I saw C.J. Stroud, who was a superstar last year, playing preseason. I saw Anthony Richardson playing last night. The most annoying thing I've seen this preseason is watching Bryce Young in a jersey, no pads on, with a chain on, smiling on the sidelines. He should not be ducking smoke in the preseason. He should have been playing. Big mistake by Dave Canales to start this late with Bryce Young playing. Thank you to Ryan Botcher. Thank you to Cap. Thank you to Schwartz. It's EJ Stewart. Thank you so much, guys. We'll see you later. Ryan, say it later.